Brothers and sisters, a family of God who celebrate as a family the arrival of a child. It's Christmas. And there's a certain radiance that occurs, usually up here after the children's service. You can see the kids taking pictures and their eyes are beaming. I always wonder just how close they are to opening the packages as that happens. What a joy Christmas is, and the celebration shouldn't be reduced to one or the other. The giving of the gifts is indeed a part of how we understand what God has done. And the celebration, from the decoration, the lights, to the whole event, to the singing of the songs and to worship, is about the coming of God's Son, who is the very radiance, the exact representation, said Hebrews, of God Himself. Even with all the joy that Christmas brings, and I have to say that last night when the little ones sang Joy to the World, it was astounding. Some of you may have seen their exuberance. But so much of it is short-lived, isn't it? And we have to gather how the tragedy of this world is resolved in a child. Jill Jones went outside with her brother and was playing in the front yard. Jill was 2, Billy was 3. And it was the last time she ever saw him, in 1962. It's one of those kind of things that you just can't really comprehend, a missing child. She came back to the house. Her mother had been in the back with a little brother taking care of him. The children out front playing like they often do. And there's her daughter with a plastic poinsettia on the front stoop. And there's no brother. She said, in broken words of a 2-year-old, there was a man. And Billy went with the man. It, of course, gathered national news. The place there in Vineland, Taylor Avenue, that's the house. And you can see the cars of the era. That's the police force that started into the whole investigation. I mean, you have to gather that this would bring the whole National Guard, hundreds of people scouring places, and there was one in particular that they thought maybe they would find a body. There's the main street, just like Grafton or Cedarburg 56 years ago. All the units that searched for him did not find anything. A number of years ago, Jill went through hypnosis to see if she could remember any details that would help discover him. And she has, to this day, said, "This is going to be the last Christmas I live without Billy." It was so traumatic that she's always hoping that they'll find him alive, somehow, somewhere. The sweater remained. There were all the evidences that he had been there. And to this day, it is the longest unsolved case of a missing child still open. This is what they say, according to the forecast, the projection of what Billy might look like at age 50 or beyond. Why is it that Christmas disappears? We come together, maybe we've put aside for 24 or 48 hours some of the family squabbles, but we go back and find them again at home. Sometimes in December, it'll be 12 months before the next contact, the next goodwill is shared. And in the news, in the neighbors, in your gut, you can feel that it's not going to be joyful for long. Maybe it's this peace on earth that's such a fond but elusive carrot out in front of us as we try to jog down the track of life. There's tragic news all around, like Billy. There's financial problems. Who hasn't heard about the market this December? There's a time perhaps without someone that you've always had at Christmas, or maybe your whole traditions have changed just this year, and there's a sadness along with you. So despite the fullness of the joy, we lack the radiance. That's why we come to the Word of God. We seek something of a morsel of a promise, and believe me, it is here. We'll go back to Exodus. It isn't about Christmas. Moses didn't have Christmas. He didn't have gingerbread cookies. And he didn't have a Christmas tree to decorate. But he had a bunch of complaining people, like thousands of them around him. And yet there is a Christmas story as we tie the discovery of Moses to the coming of the Christ child. Page 7, a radiance of glory veils his face. Moses asked to see God's glory, but was denied. In Exodus 33 and 34, you have the explanation of how Moses would receive the Ten Commandments. He was out in the wilderness and wandering with a people that often would rebel against God, miracle after miracle, but they wanted more. They wanted meat. They got manna, and they wanted bigger dining, more courses. They wanted more control and more of what they wanted from God. And so when Moses went up on the mountain to receive the Ten Commandments, it was one of the lowest points of his life. Not the receiving of the Ten Commandments, but you remember what happened as he came down. What an incredible switch of time in 40 days while he'd been in the presence of God, filled to the brim and overflowing with joy and radiance. The children of Israel had decided they could use other gods. And they told him, "We thought you weren't coming back." So they decided to pull the plug on the God that had led them out of Egypt and substitute something that they could touch and feel. A golden calf, a created God. And when Moses, after a few choice words, came down, he destroyed, he broke the Ten Commandments. If you think you've had a rough day, go to Moses' day and see Israel in their absolute rejection of God, their unbelief. What a devastating thing for a leader. And it was a large number of people. So Moses asked for a sign, just to find out if he could go on, just to find out if there was any hope left, just to find out. And you and I know that feeling. If we're going to make it tomorrow. And Moses said, "Now show me your glory." And the Lord said, "I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on those whom I have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion." But he said, "You cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live." And the Lord said, "There's a place near me where you may stand on a rock, and when my glory passes, I will put you in a cleft on the rock and cover you with my hand until I pass by, and then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen." You know, to see Jesus is to see God in a veil. It is to see the back of God, not the front. But some people can't see God in Jesus. If you think that Billy is the longest case of a missing child, that's not true. This one has been missing for many human beings for 2,000 years. They celebrate Christmas, but it is an empty shell. They have a gift, they unwrap it, and they go on and play with nothing in the box. The missing child of Christmas. God reminded Moses that coming near to a holy God is not a small thing. All right. How close is close? Well, you know the Wheel of Fortune, don't you? Pat Sajak? Did you know that Renee almost won? If you get this question, what is the seventh day of the 12 days of Christmas? She had it all solved after 13 of the 19 letters. She said, I'd like to solve the puzzle. You know what it is? Seven swans a swimming. And the G is usually left off. So she didn't pronounce the G. And Pat Sajak said, I'm sorry, that's not it. She said, what? He said, I'm sorry, you pronounced it in the vernacular. And then he went on to the next one and said, go ahead. And she expressed swimming and would win. Now, we might say, that's just too precise, or you couldn't be that stuck in the mud, could you? But those were the rules of Wheel of Fortune. And while we're trying to get to know God better, He is explaining Himself. He's expanding our ability to comprehend. He listened to Moses, who needed an encouragement. He gave Moses a little bit of him, a little bit that only Moses could tolerate. And even that would have its effect. We can't get anywhere near the glory of God. You sometimes will throw your temper tantrums, even if you're 60 or 70 years old, against God, because He doesn't answer and come face to face and ring the doorbell. I do too. I sometimes want God with skin on, and He's actually that close. God reminded Moses that being close to God meant that we would have to take Him as He is, but we can't. Because of our flaws, because of our sin, because of our weakness of unbelief, it's always there. Lord, help my unbelief. It would destroy us. And every little mistake would be begging Him to punish us. And yet, the people had a new lesson to learn in Moses. You know, the one thing about Moses when he came down from the hill was that the people recognized where he had been. He was closer to God than any other human being in the history of mankind. Listen to the whole of the text that I'm quoting now from 34:29. It's called The Radiant Face of Moses. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the covenant law in his hands, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken to the Lord. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them. So Aaron and all the leaders of the community came back to him, and he spoke to them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them the commands the Lord had given him on Mount Sinai. When Moses finished speaking to them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, meaning in the tent of meeting, he removed the veil until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, they saw that his face was radiant. Then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went in to speak with the Lord. Now, some people will say, how could that happen? There is no such thing in the history of mankind that's ever been documented. Yes, it has. It's just that they don't accept the documentation. Moses became a living legend of God, literally reflecting how close he had been. And the people were afraid again and again. They were reminded that God is a holy God. They could tell something about Moses, that he was close to God. Now, this is an example of the two phases. Moses when he is with God, and Moses when he's with the people. You catch the correlation with the missing child? He's not missing at all. He's with us. He's just veiled. Now, this is how he puts skin on. And this next part, as I read, I'm going to eventually ask you to join with me. It is dramatic, I will grant you. But it ties to the Old Testament scripture. As you see, this is how God then gave to Moses who he really is. The Lord came down in the cloud and stood there with him and proclaimed his name, the Lord. And he passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. We call this the gospel, the good news, in a nutshell, in the Old Testament. I will never forget how this was broadcast in my seminary training. People say there's no gospel in the Old Testament, and right there's Jesus. Slow to anger, abounding in love, maintaining love to thousands, forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin for you, for me, for America, for the world. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. If he's unveiled, it will be costly. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. The Lord himself will give you a sign. You know, Moses asked for a sign. Here was one. The virgin will conceive and bear a child. She'll give birth to a son. And we'll call him the name we should understand, God with us. Which means God with us once again. But you, Bethlehem, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. Read with me. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. So now you've been in the presence of the child. Is he still missing? In your house, people can tell that you've been to the store by all the presents that are around. In your kitchen, they can tell that you've been cooking because of the cookies. And they look at the pictures of your life on Facebook and they see that you've been out sledding and enjoying the winter. It's vacation time, hurrah. They see the frustration on your face with a family event, perhaps some of those relatives you only see once a year. And then they realize how quickly you fall asleep at night because you don't get back in touch with them, and they realize you're burning the candle at both ends. But what does it look like when you've seen God? God veiled himself even in a crib so he could bless us. Someone once said, first God made us in his image, and ever since we've been returning the compliment. You know what that means? That we try to make God in our image. We try to have God on our terms, and it doesn't work. Because God is God. He is unique. You and I don't control him. He is giving to us a loving, gracious control. And at times that is the hardest thing in the world to understand. He tried to please the impatient people of Israel around Moses. And in human terms, we would say he failed. But he did give a sign of a son. And even as Israel would announce through Aaron, these are your gods who led you up out of Egypt, and they worshiped a golden calf, God will say through the prophets, comfort, comfort my people. Tell her tenderly that her sin has been paid for. And in chapter 53, that he was pierced for our transgressions. And by his wounds we are healed. He abounds. He abounds in compassionate love. My final story is from Sandy Hook Elementary School. Dylan Hockley was in first grade. You could tell the color that he loved the most by the way things went down at his funeral. Everybody, mom, dad, every student, every counselor, every teacher, they all wore purple because Dylan loved purple. But there's something else that people knew about him. And it's the bigger story of that event. That Dylan was in a classroom with a teacher that refused to let him go as the gunman screamed out and rounded the corner. When they found Dylan, that's where you would expect if a teacher, and I don't mean this, I just say, you know, sometimes in our reality of our world, this is really hard stuff. And teachers, I don't know what you might do in the moment of a crisis, but this teacher enveloped Dylan Huckley in her arms. And they could tell that Dylan was loved by someone at great cost to the person with whom he died. She died covering him in compassion. There's huge significance in the words of our blessing because God has come. He has lifted up his countenance upon us. His radiance shines out in the blessing of Christmas, of Jesus the baby. And it isn't a celebration about when we were with God, but when God chose to be with us. In his Son, he has veiled his person and his presence, but not his power. He came to deliver us. And let this Christmas day arrive with radiant joy on your face. If, for some reason, I was able to give you an unlimited Visa, MasterCard, or just an envelope full of greenbacks today, you'd go away chattering, wouldn't you? What if that credit card took care of all of your financial problems for the rest of your life? You'd call this a good day. When Jesus came, when Christmas began, God wiped out our entire debt forever and put it on his Son. Now that's a reason to smile with joy. Amen.